Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Friday, March 17, 2017. A former SPLM spokesman joins the ranks of defectors from the Kiir administration.
Have you seen anything being taken to villages? Have you seen any prosperity? Have you seen any democracy in the SPLM? And since all these do not happen, you would never expect a rational-minded person to remain in the SPLM.
And a consortium of South Sudanese political parties threatens to pull out of the national dialogue.
We will not be part of this because we know it will not produce results. And if the process needed to produce results, then the government must find a suitable ways to negotiate and fire and build the confidence of the armed opposition so that they come in the table.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. The former spokesman and member of the SPLM Liberation Council has joined the National Salvation Front. Ian Matthew Chol says there is no democracy in South Sudan's ruling party under the leadership of President Kiir. Matthew says his attempts to bring reform to the party were ignored by some senior members of the SPLM, including the chairman of the ruling party.
So many times we have been trying our level best to talk to our comrades, advise them as enshrined in the SPLM constitution. However, this does not happen. We continue to reform, but no ears listen to what we have been doing, simply because our comrades in the government feel that the party belongs to the government, and the government is not a party-led government. As a result of this, we lost so many comrades in the secretariat who were killed or either detained simply because they were carrying on the normal work of supervising and advising our comrades to the government. Jane Council took our responsibility, and Sulphur does no longer cling to our advice, but listens to the advice of his relatives within the Jin Council.
South Sudanese that I've spoken to since 2013 have been saying the cause of the problem in South Sudan is the ruling party, the SPLM, a party that you were a very active member of. Now, after moving out of the party, you are criticizing the party. Someone will say that you are part of the problem.
Yes, it is very true. I was in the SPLM, and we were working very hard, actually, to make sure that the SPLM becomes a ruling party. Of course, political party rules through its cadres. The political ruling party rules through its programs and its strategies. This does not happen, and as a result of this, I gave my resignation before 2013.
What are you doing now after moving away from SPLM all these years? What are you doing?
I have been fighting the government because I believe that the objectives that we ever believed in are no longer being treated as they are supposed to be. Again, the revolution is a revolution unless it makes people happy, prosperous, unless the revolution provides shelter, health, education, food, clean water. And unless the SPLM provides this, the other people will, of course, prefer other political parties. This is simple arithmetic.
Let me use your word here. You said if the party is not fulfilling its promises, the people will choose other political parties. Which political party have you chosen?
For me, I have opted to be a member of the National Salvation Front.
Why?
Of course, this decision comes because it is our handmaid. It is something that we are doing because we have already diagnosed what is the real problem that is curtailing and bogging down our country. That makes the National Salvation Front very genuine. Again, given the situation for South Sudan, we need a political party that is a little bit national, not a political party that is that came into existence as a reactionary given circumstances.
I remember listening to some of your statements in Juba when you were the spokesperson for the SPLM. You were defending the SPLM, saying it's a national outfit that brings all South Sudanese together Today, you're saying it's not.
This is very true. I have been defending SPLM as a party with a clear vision. But as long as I felt that the minority clique is no longer living up to the core values of the SPLM, have you seen any town being taken to villages? Have you seen any prosperity in such a rich country that is having about 70% of its land as rich as ready for agricultural services? Have you seen any democracy in the SPLM? And since all this did not happen, you would never expect a rational-minded person to remain in the SPLM.
That was Ian Matthew Chol, former spokesman and member of the SPLM Liberation Council. Matthew has joined the National Salvation Front. He was speaking to me from the Sudanese capital, Khartoum, earlier today. The head of the National Alliance, an umbrella group of nine South Sudanese opposition political parties, say he will not take part in the national dialogue because its results have been predetermined by the government. But Onyoti Adigo, head of the Democratic Change Party, says President Salva Kiir has assured him that the national dialogue will be an inclusive process. Tito Justin reports for VOA from Juba.
Peter Mayen, who runs the National Alliance and is also head of the People's Liberal Party, describes the national dialogue as a one-party dialogue. Information Minister Michael Makwe told reporters last week that rebels and people living in rebel-held areas must first renounce rebellion before being allowed to participate in the dialogue. Mayen says the process will be inclusive so that armed groups will lay down their weapons at the end of the exercise.
We will not be part of this because we know it will not produce results. And there's no point to be part of a process that will not produce results. And if the process needed to produce results, then the government must find a suitable ways to negotiate and fight and build the confidence of the armed opposition so that they come in the table.
Mayen is urging the international community not to fund the national dialogue if it excludes armed opposition groups and key opposition political parties not in the Kiir administration.
We strongly believe that the national dialogue should produce indicators, should produce results. At the absence of the armed oppositions, there is little can be achieved in practicality or in actual sense on the grounds toward peace and toward the final solutions to South Sudan. Dynamic problems, because most of the problem in South Sudan are centered in the hearts of governance.
Onyoti Adigo, head of the opposition Democratic Change Party and newly appointed agriculture minister, denies the government has set any preconditions for participation. Adigo says Mr. Kiir, whom he met with 2 days ago, wants the national dialogue to include everyone, including those who have taken up arms against his government.
He said if the national dialogue will be inclusive. You know, there are people who will talk when it is not the policy of the government. Until we go and this myself now, but at the present moment, I know that the president, according to his statement in parliament, he said this national dialogue is inclusive. And last time, the president, declared in the national prayer days that if I have done anything, forgive me, God, give me wisdom, so that we solve the problem of South Sudanese.
Joseph Okello Nago, chairman of the United Sudan African Party and a member of the steering committee on the national dialogue, says his party believes the process should be inclusive.
Dialogue means you have to meet all the stakeholders, whether they are armed men or they are civilians, they've got to be met. The members, their list has been put forward by the president, but they have not yet been called. And when we are called as members, we will sit and draw up all the areas where we want to contact.
Ukel says it is premature to say that X and Y will be excluded because it is the committee which will decide who takes part in the national dialogue, which the president had said in December would begin sometime this month. For VOA News, I am Tito Justin in Juba.
The South Sudan government says the national dialogue scheduled for this month will take place without the participation of members of the armed opposition. Presidential spokesman Ateng Wek Ateng tells VOA's James Batty the process is aimed at ending the conflict in the country and it should take place in South Sudan.
We are in a period of national reconciliation and the national dialogue, which we intend to bring the people of South Sudan together.
But, you know, the UN mission in South Sudan had been vocal in the past, accusing your government of blocking aid delivery.
No, what we tell them is the advice, and they take it as a block. We advise them. You know, most of the UN convoys, they wanted to move into an area, but when we advise them that should they need escort from the government of South Sudan soldiers to ensure their safety, they reject that. And by rejecting that, they get into the wrong place at the wrong time.
You mentioned your country is engaged in national dialogue. President Kiir has, or your Minister of Information has come out the other day, setting preconditions for who can attend this national dialogue. Do you think that's a very good idea? And does President Kiir stand by that?
No, the Minister of Information did not give conditions. He alluded to the fact that anybody who is willing to engage in national dialogue process should denounce violence, particularly the wing, which is led by the former First Vice President, Dr. Machar. That wing is actually engaged in violence. They have not heeded to all advices given to their forces to get to containment areas in order, if they wanted to be part of the national army, they would be absorbed to the national army, or otherwise they would go peacefully to civilian life if they so choose. But they have been engaging in violence. So Minister of Information was responding to the questions whether Riek Machar would be allowed to come to Juba and participate in the process of national dialogue. In his response, he said Riek Machar should come to Juba only when he renounced violence. This is the standard the whole world has adopted. You cannot allow the Al-Shabaab to come to Kenya if they are not renounced violence. You cannot allow ISIS to come back and melt into a civilian population if they don't renounce violence.
The president has said that the dialogue will take place in March, this month. When will the dialogue start, and what do you think should be the venue, Juba or somewhere outside the country?
Well, the good intention is that the country has to dialogue within itself. The national dialogue venue will be all 32 states of the Republic of South Sudan because it is bottom-up approach. The government is only a patron of the national dialogue, but the process is the people, people to people.
That's Ateng Wek Ateng, presidential spokesman. He was speaking to viewers James Berti from Juba. Aid agencies warn that thousands of civilians displaced by recent fighting in Wau Shiluk area risk dying from hunger or diseases. Officials with the French medical group Médecins Sans Frontières says displaced people lack food, water and medication. The aid agency says they are finding it more difficult to help the needy because their facilities have been looted. Waki Simon Wudu has more for VOA from Juba.
MSF head of mission in South Sudan, Marcus Bachman, says thousands of civilians from Wau Shiluk could die if they do not receive help soon. Bachman says most of them are women and children seeking refuge in the capital Kodok of the newly created Fasoda State, formerly part of Upper Nile State.
They had to flee in a hurry, leaving behind most of their belongings, most of their basic items. So they were basically running for their lives and are now lacking essential items. To start with, the most important for people is safe drinking water and access to sanitation, as well as food.
Bachman says MSF is operating an emergency hospital clinic that provides medical services to 30,000 civilians who escaped the fighting between government forces and unknown militia groups in Wau Shiluk. Over the last 2 weeks, he says MSF is providing an average of 300 consultations a day, six times the number that used to occur in Wau Shiluk Hospital before the evacuation. Most of the diseases patients suffer from are respiratory infections and acute diarrhea. Bachman says children, pregnant women, and the elderly are the most affected people.
If the water and sanitary situation does not improve very quickly, there is a very, very high risk of outbreaks and a very high risk that mainly children, particularly the children who are very vulnerable, fall sick and are in danger to die of preventable waterborne diseases.
Bachman says more than 90% are lacking basic supplies, such as plastic seating to protect them against the hot sun during the day or the cold temperatures at night. They also need jerrycans to collect clean water. Bachman says for weeks, people have been surviving on only 2 liters of clean drinking water per person, an amount still below the guidelines for water required to remain healthy in an emergency environment. The International Organization for Migration, or IOM, is providing clean drinking water to some 24,000 displaced people in Abroch Village. Ashley McLaughlin, IOM Communication Officer in South Sudan, says the humanitarian situation there is dire.
The population, there was very, very little infrastructure to access water before we got there. The boreholes that there were, the water that was coming out was dirty and not clean. There wasn't enough of it. Some people were digging sort of their own wells, right, hand-dug wells, you know, a few feet underground. But this would dry up quickly, and even the water that they were accessing was dirty and unsafe to drink.
McLaughlin says IOM workers fetch water from the river, treat it, and then distribute it to the civilians. But Bachman says efforts by organizations responding to the needy have been constrained by repeated lootings. He says MSF facilities in Wau Siluk were looted, as were other 8 agencies, when the fighting broke out. He is appealing to the warring parties to restore stability across the country and to stop attacking civilians. Wake Simon Wudu, VOA News, Juba.
You are tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, we take a look at how South Sudanese women are surviving in the Ugandan capital, Kampala. That story is coming up after this break.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
do you think it's okay for people to show their emotions in public?
I think it's okay, because some emotions, you cannot stop them. It comes naturally, so I don't think there's a reason why somebody would fight emotions. It's natural. They come naturally, so people should let them flow.
Yeah, I think that to some extent it is okay for them to do, depending on how they express those emotions.
It can be positive, it can be negative, and some people might go overboard, and then it will cause problems.
Yes, regardless of emotions, whether positive or negative, it may be good, or because emotion may be happy or it may be sad. So if it is for good, it's good for them to show, like you can laugh, you can play with someone. But if it is harming somebody, then it's not good.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
For in-depth news and analysis on events in South Sudan, tune in to South Sudan in Focus, Monday through Friday from 1630 to 1700 UTC. We are also on the web at www.voanews.com/South Sudan, or download our podcast on iTunes. That's South Sudan in Focus on VOA Africa.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus. U.S. President Donald Trump's new U.S. budget proposal has been met with harsh criticism among Democratic and some Republican lawmakers. One humanitarian advocate warns there will be more suffering around the world if deep cuts are made to U.S.-funded aid programs. Ian Bior has more for VOA from Washington.
President Trump's budget chief, Mick Mulvaney, told reporters at the White House yesterday that the budget represents a shift in U.S. foreign policy priorities, adding that it represents a change from what he calls soft power diplomacy.
He wants more money for defense, more money for border enforcement, more money for law enforcement generally, more money for the vets, more money for school choice, and then to offset that money with savings elsewhere, so that all of that is done without an additional dollar added to the deficit.
The proposed budget, which the White House calls a blueprint, would slash funding for the United Nations and its affiliated agencies, including UN peacekeeping. The White House says that the funding burden should be shared more evenly among members, and that the U.S. would not contribute more than 25% for UN peacekeeping costs. The U.S. State Department and USAID would see an approximately 28% cut in their budgets, or about $10 billion in cuts. Francisca Vagad, senior advocate for Women and Girls for Refugees International, says the proposed cuts would not only affect humanitarian programs, including life-saving food assistance for refugees, but would also affect the United States' ability to diplomatically engage around the world.
In places like South Sudan, that kind of engagement is so critical to ensure that UNMISS is working well in its protection of civilians mandate, that all parties to the conflict can come to the table and seek a resolution and start to work towards peace to limit the impact of this conflict on South Sudan's population, and then, of course, limit the influx of refugees.
Congresswoman Karen Bass, a Democrat from the West Coast state of California, who recently introduced legislation that would rush $100 million U.S. dollars to USAID to counter the famine in South Sudan, says she will continue to monitor developments closely, but says hundreds of thousands of South Sudanese are in need of immediate assistance in the country's man-made crisis.
We need to double down on our diplomatic efforts and do anything we can. But cutting off money is also not the solution, especially when you have people who literally will die if they don't get food. So I think that, you know, this is not the time when there is a humanitarian crisis that's right upon us to debate whether or not, you know, giving money or not is helpful.
The White House budget allows for funding of humanitarian assistance, including food aid, disaster and refugee program funding, with a focus on highest priority areas, while, quote, asking the world to pay their fair share. The budget would also cut funding to the World Bank and other development banks by some $650 million over 3 years. The Trump White House says even with the cuts to multilateral development banks, the U.S. would still remain a top donor. It would also eliminate funding to the Washington-based U.S. Institute of Peace and the Woodrow Wilson Center, along with other independent government-funded organizations. Congresswoman Bass says the issues around the world require the U.S. to remain fully engaged and ready to provide assistance when necessary.
I mean, I think we have a new administration who I believe is probably not fully aware of some of the crises that are happening around the world, and we can ignore them at our own peril. And so, you know, it's my hope that we will understand that addressing these crises absolutely impact our national security here at home.
Republican Senate Foreign Relations Committee Chairman Bob Corker from the southern state of Tennessee told reporters yesterday he believes that Congress and the White House will agree on an appropriate balance that recognizes the critical role of diplomacy while advancing U.S. interests and saving taxpayer dollars. Ayan Bior, VOA News, Washington.
And now for some positive news. Some South Sudanese women in Uganda have found a way of supporting each other. Simon Peter Apiku has more on the efforts of these South Sudanese women who are looking after each other during a tough economic crisis in South Sudan.
South Sudanese women in Uganda have modified this merry-go-round way of helping each other by extending it from cash contributions to commodities such as soap and sugar. The women say the practice is making it possible for many who live from hand to mouth to purchase household items they would have never been able to do otherwise. Aneta Andua is a founding member of one such group with about 20 members in Kampala. She says the Sanduk idea was adopted as a result of the many hardships the South Sudanese women in Kampala were facing.
When we came here, life was hard, and this inspired us to come up with this initiative. We had no means of survival. We were suffering and struggling to survive.
The women in the group meet once a week, each time at the home of the beneficiary of that week's collection of items. Annette Asienzo, another member of Andua's group, says they collect the kinds of items women need most in their homes.
We came up with a suggestion of helping each other by collecting at least 1 bar, 1 kilo of sugar or more, because you alone, you can't afford those things.
Hacienzo says individual women cannot purchase these items in large quantities. She says the contributions have been particularly useful for those with children at boarding schools.
When you see 10 bars of soap, 10 kilos of sugar, and you have 2 kids in school, at least each of the 2 you will take 2 to school, and you'll remain with some to help you at home. By the time it is getting over, another round comes in.
Joyce Keji, another member of the group, says each week they also collect a small amount of money which they deposit with the group's treasurer. Group members can borrow money from their savings to help them out in difficult situations.
Like your friend also falls sick, sometimes the child is sick, also you will call your friend because that money we are contributing, we are putting with one person is keeping for us the money, and then we are giving for assistance also.
Gale Khalifa, another group member, says in Arabic she sees enormous advantages in the practice because most South Sudanese women here do not have reliable incomes.
Before this idea occurred to us, life was tough for all of us. We were unable to buy these items in large quantities. So when one of us came with this concept, we thought it was also really a good way of bringing women together.
As the economic and financial crisis continues in South Sudan, many are slashing remittances to Uganda, and more women have become the family breadwinners. They earn a small profit from the sale of homemade bread, peanut butter, or by sewing clothes and bed sheets. Some say their income is unreliable due to stiff competition. And with nothing to fall back on in case of an emergency, South Sudanese women see the Sanduk initiative as their only hope of surviving difficult living conditions in Uganda. For VOA News, I'm Simon Peter Apiku in Kampala.
That report by Simon Peter Apiku from Kampala brings us to the end of our show for this Friday. We now leave you with the song Khalina Shtakal by Lomerika San. We have been listening to Lomerika San with the song Khalina Shtakal, which means let's get down to work. I'm John Tanza in Washington. We are glad you joined us. Have a safe and peaceful weekend. Tune in on Monday for a fresh edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Oh, sala atalizatu.